And yeah, we're very happy to have Subir Sachdev from Harvard University here, who will talk about ancilla qubit wave functions for the pseudogap metal phase of the cuprates. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the invitation to speak at this conference, and thanks especially to Mary Carmen for switching with me. I really appreciate that. I should also note that I have to teach a class at 3 p.m., so I will end at 2:50 as originally scheduled. So, well, at least with the discussion, so well, but I think what I have to say should fit in the available time. So let me also say that, actually I should turn on my video, shouldn't I? One second. Sorry, okay, now you can see me, right? Okay. So this the new results I'll present today towards the end of my talk are the main idea really is due to Yaohui Zhang, who's a postdoc at Harvard. So this talk concerns metals, or more precisely systems which have a Fermi surface. So this is something Frank talked about a little bit this morning, where you're using tensor networks to, or I think it was, yeah. Was it a Mera ansatz to describe the system with the Fermi surface? So these turn out to be extremely important for the cuprate compounds. So I'm going to talk about an ansatz for a possible explanation of some of the mysteries of the cuprates. And this ansatz had the flavor of tensor networks or PEPS type states, which is why I decided to talk about it here. There are many open questions, and I'm hoping that some of the advanced technology that people have developed, especially in evaluating PEPS, can be used to the problems that we are interested in here. Okay, so a basic property of a system with a Fermi surface or a metal is something called the Luttinger theorem. So this, you know, goes back to the 60s. It's a theorem proved for fermions with arbitrary interactions. And it seemed like an exact statement, but it really is a perturbative statement about continuity from the free electron system. So let me just remind you what that is in its full generality. And it's going to play a central role in everything we're going to talk about. So we consider some general model of interacting electrons, call them C, with spin up and spin down, and also a bunch of spins. So S equals 1/2 spins, typically in a condensed matter system, these are spins of some heavy electron, some heavy metal, which has got say an F orbital, which is highly localized. So you have this F electron, just one electron per site, alpha can be up or down, and that carries a spin 1/2 spin. Okay, so you have, in this simplest way of thinking about it, two species of fermions, which obey the usual fermion anti-commutation relations, but one of them is totally localized, F alpha is one, because, strong interactions or whatever, it just can be treated as a spin. So it's often useful sometimes to think of this as just an abstract spin. So just think of it as a qubit. So some of the electrons actually just become qubits because of this constraint. And so I could equally well write the theory of this this system in terms of the qubit operators, the Pauli operators X, Y, and Z. Okay, and these two different points of view, some thinking of them as actual fermions, the other thinking of them as qubits, will play an important role. And really the central puzzle and issue here is fully understanding how you go back and forth between these different ways of thinking about qubits, and when do qubits look like fermions, and when do they look really like qubits? Okay, so here's some general Hamiltonian of these mobile electrons, which have arbitrary interactions between them. And then there's an interaction Hamiltonian for the qubits, if you wish. The qubits interact with each other with some Jij, and the qubits also interact with the mobile electrons, and this is typically called the Kondo couplet. So this is a very general class of systems, and for such a system, that we have something called the Luddington theorem. So the theorem states that if you find the Fermi surface, the full interacting many-body system, find its Fermi surface. For now, let's just think of it the location of discontinuity in the electron distribution function. Then the volume enclosed by this Fermi surface in momentum space. Since you work in momentum space, this volume has units of density. And it's in fact equal to the density of all the electrons, modulo some trivial phase space factors, and factor of 1/2 for spin. So that's certainly true for free electrons, and the claim is also true for an arbitrary interacting electron system. If you're in a solid, not in the continuum, then you can have bands, and this result is only true modulo 2, because fill bands can take away 2 electrons. Okay. Now, an important point is that these qubits or spins, these F electrons, are included in the count of electron density. So even if the electrons are not moving, they're just forming qubits sitting there, they still should be included in the electron density count. And this is quite a remarkable fact, but actually, as we'll see, it's very well verified in many theories and experiments. So how does one prove this kind of theorem? Well, the traditional method, going back to the 60s, is to just draw lots of diagrams and pull all kinds of fancy things about the diagrams, ordered entities and so on. But to use this diagrammatic approach, you have to do perturbation theory. And how do you do perturbation theory in spins? Well, the way you do it is usually think of them as electrons. You think of the spins as electrons with some strong repulsion on site UF, so that as UF goes to infinity, they just become exactly qubits, and every site likes to have only one electron. But you reach the strong interaction limit by expanding about UF equals zero. So if you do this expansion, then you will prove this statement here. Now, okay, that sounds a bit dangerous that you're trying to understand UF equals infinity by expanding about UF equals zero. And that danger has been somewhat overcome. Well, it has been overcome by more sophisticated proofs, modern type proofs of this Luttinger result. And this was an approach pioneered by Hoshikawa, and there's a very nice recent paper by Dominic Els, Ryan Thongren, and Senthil, who have used a more sophisticated point of view using anomalies. So it's some, I put that in quotes because not precisely an anomaly, but the fundamental symmetries here are the global conservation of electron number and translations. And just thinking about what happens when you do a large gauge transformation in this U1 symmetry leads you to this theorem. And this approach, David, kind of this approach, it also works with spin qubits. Okay. All right. But it turns out that this new approach also shows you that there is a loophole, that there's a way to get around it. And you can get metallic states which do not obey have the Luttinger volume. Sometimes people say they violate the Luttinger theorem. Well, you can't violate a theorem. It's a theorem. It's valid under some conditions. But let's refer to the Luttinger volume that's obtained by the Luttinger theorem. And that Luttinger volume can change in a different system, which in fact, if you look carefully, doesn't obey the assumptions of the proof of Luttinger's theorem. Okay, so how does let me give you an example of how this, try to give a physical picture of why this theorem should even work for spins. So here we have just a pictorial representation of what's called the Kondo effect. You have electrons C moving around, and you have exactly one spin. So you have this one spin coupled to the C of electrons. So this is a qubit, one qubit coupled to mobile electrons by this Kondo coupling JK. So what we've learned from very sophisticated analysis in the 70s and 80s is that this spin, this qubit, behaves like a qubit at high temperatures, so where it gives you a QD susceptibility. But at low temperatures, it basically dissolves into the Fermi C. It gets screened by the electrons, there's no free spin left, and it just becomes part of the Fermi C. So it really becomes effectively mobile and a fermion, and it only gives a Pauli susceptibility at low temperature. And, you know, that's the essence of the Kondo effect, stated in, you know, somewhat modern language, I suppose. And it's that same effect that we're going to use over and over again in my talk. Okay, so now how about a Kondo lattice? So now you take not just one spin, but the original model I showed you, a lattice of spins, each coupled to mobile electrons by the same Kondo coupling JK. So you have a sum over I, you have these qubits, these F qubits here, coupled to the mobile electrons. Well, if you assume the same thing, that all of the Kondo effect still happens, that the spins just become effectively mobile by dissolving into the Fermi C, then you get what's called the heavy fermions, metal, heavy fermion state. And this, in fact, describes, to the best of our understanding, you know, wide variety of heavy fermion metals. So you get these F electrons effectively become mobile, but they have a rather heavy mass, and this is easily shows up in experiments. So this rather exotic looking picture where these stationary qubits dissolve and become part of the Fermi C really is actually the conventional, gives you a state that obeys the conventional Fermi liquid of Luttinger theorem, and is experimentally actually quite common. But it's really quite remarkable that such a thing happens. And if you think about it, why should a qubit just become a fermion? But it does on its own. Okay. And because effectively these qubits have dissolved into the Fermi C, the size of the Fermi surface counts the F electrons, so it becomes larger. So if you have density P of electrons C and density one per site, you know, per unit cell of the F electrons, then the volume of the Fermi surface enclosed by the Fermi surface is one plus P, which is the Luttinger volume. Okay, so this is supposed to be a talk about wave function. So here's a trial wave function you can write down, which shows you this process. So basically, you first of all, you ignore the fact that these are qubits. Just think of them as free electrons. Think of F as free. Now, F is free and C is free. You've just got two bands of free electrons. They have some hopping between them. Think of this thing as some effective hopping. So you can form some wave function where it treats both the C and the F as free electrons. And what do free electrons want to do? They want to form a slater determinant. That's the Fermi C of both bands. So you form a slater determinant or a Fermi C of C and F. And this, by construction, will have the large Fermi surface. But then you realize, wait a minute, you've got to, these are not really free. These are the F electrons are not allowed to move, only the spin is allowed to exchange the bond with the bulk. So what you do that, the way you do that is by just projecting the wave function. You take the slater determinant, you expand it out, and you throw out the terms which have either zero or two F electrons on these red sites. So just project it out. So this is the hard part numerically. It's kind of a projection, you know, in the spirit of the PEPS projection, where you're just projecting into a restricted Hilbert space or the physical Hilbert space of the F electron. So you give F more degrees of freedom, sort of again in the spirit of PEPS, if you wish. You wrote down a wave function in the expanded Hilbert space, and then you project it back into the filled fixed the Hilbert space that's physical, where these are actually qubits. And what we have learned from various calculations, numerical and analytic, that this projection operation doesn't do much to the basic structure of the wave function. It's really quite innocuous, and so you get the right picture where you actually treated the qubits as just free electrons, quite remarkably. Okay. So the Luttinger theorem is obeyed. All right. So that's now the modern way of thinking about this, which is if you want to do gauge theories and really understand this in a modern perspective, the way you think about it is you have a gauge, because you have this constraint that these are qubits, you have a gauge symmetry. If you change F to e to the I theta times F, that doesn't change any physical operator. So you have a gauge symmetry. in the original theory. So you can rewrite the original model if you insist on writing in terms of Fs, it's a gauge theory. But now what you do is you go into, you Higgs the gauge symmetry. And the way you Higgs it is by condensing this object, which is the hybridization or the hopping between the two bands. You give an expectation value of C dagger F. This carries a unit gauge charge because F carries a gauge charge. C doesn't carry a gauge charge. So this has a gauge charge. There's an emergent gauge field that came up here, but then you break it, you Higgs it completely. And the Higgsing phenomenon is basically telling you that the constraint doesn't matter, that really the Fs are mobile. Okay. All right. So there has been quite a bit of numerical and analytical work on this, and this is all well understood work. Everything I'm telling you was basically understood in the 90s. I would say not by me at all, but by many people whose names I mentioned in the previous slide. Okay, so now we're ready to move into the modern era. And looking at the time, I probably won't get through everything here. So let me first describe another possibility, which is we call the FL star phase, where you get a metal which violates the Luttinger volume, okay? So this is, a fairly theoretical discussion, although this has also found, it appears, many possible experimental realizations. My intention then was to give you some perspective on the experiments in the cuprates. I probably will skip that and then go directly to the main new result. Okay, so what is the FL star phase? So this is associated with the violation of this basic theorem of textbook condensed matter physics. It's not a violation, it's a new state. So it doesn't violate the theorem, it has a different volume. So the Luttinger volume can be violated in a metal when there is bulk topological order. So this is of course not something that Luttinger knew anything about. Bulk topology is a modern concept, starting again in the 90s. You might say topological order really is a statement about gap states. And this is definitely not a gap state. So what do I mean by saying that there's bulk topological order? So the more precise statements is that there is an emergent gauge field. So if you have a state that has an emergent gauge field, which is unbroken, and we just saw the fact that in the heavy Fermi liquid state, the gauge symmetry was broken. But if it's unbroken, then you can find violation of the Luttinger volume. And roughly speaking, this is a modern argument, which shows the way you can do this. This anomaly associated with large gauge transformation can be satisfied by the contribution from this emergent gauge field. That's just a very quick summary of something that's made much more precise in this recent paper by Els et al. Okay, so in this manner, you can obtain what we call the FL star phase. It's FL in the sense that it's a metal which seems completely innocuous, because if you look at the quasi-particles around the Fermi surface, you wouldn't notice anything anomalous there. It just looks like ordinary electrons. But the volume, the number of these quasi-particles, or the volume enclosed by this surface, is not the right one. Okay, so how does this happen? Well, I've set the things up that you can easily see how this happens. So this was the phase where the gauge symmetry was broken. So basically, let's not let it break. And how can that happen? Well, that can happen if the qubits then actually behave like qubits, and they form what we would call in condensed matter a spin liquid state. So now you have these qubits forming and getting entangled with each other, some kind of resonating valence bond state of the F electrons or of the qubits. So there's all these possible entanglements between them, whereas the C electrons remain mobile. So from another perspective, you know, this is kind of a trivial statement, because it's saying that the surprising thing I claimed earlier, which seems to people assume always happen, doesn't happen. You can have the F electrons on the qubits just form a spin liquid on their own. So now if you wanted a trial wave function for this, you would form two slater determinants, one for the Fs and one for the C. There would be no hybridization. because the hybridization is the thing that breaks the gauge symmetry. And then you do the projection. The projection only act on this. So the first part is just your usual spin liquid wave function of an RVB times the slater determinant of the C. Okay, so the Luttinger volume is violated, but that's fine because this RVB state, the spin liquid here, has an emergent gauge field in our modern understanding in all cases. Okay, so the nice thing about this is that it gives you a very direct experimental probe in principle of an emergent gauge field. All you have to do is measure the size of the Fermi surface. If it's the wrong one, you have measured the appearance in principle of an emergent gauge field. Okay, there's also, I'll skip this. People sometimes call this a selective Mott transition, where you had a system. If this is would be valid in the limit where F for actual electrons, it's small UF. So this is some kind of metal over here where both C and F are moving around. And then at this point, some of the electrons, the F electrons, localize. They become an insulator. So some of the electrons become insulators, the others remain a metal, and then you obtain this exotic FL star state. Okay. And then you can write down a theory for this. It's basically a gauge theory where this boson condenses and look at fluctuations. And there are even some recent experiments which may have seen some aspects of those fluctuations. Okay. So that's a summary of somewhat older work on these two possible phases that you can find in generic metallic systems, especially those with two bands, the Fermi liquid phase and this Fermi liquid star phase. This would be a good point for pause for questions, if anybody has questions. Okay, you can all hear me, right? Okay, so let me continue then. All right, so I think I'm going to skip this attempt. So the main point is that this whole approach I described for this Fermi volume violation is very much tied to this two-band condo lattice model. So let's go to the cuprates, where you don't have this kind of natural distinction between electrons that like to move around and qubits that don't like to move around. There's no such thing in the cuprates. All the electrons are essentially, in the same band. Okay, so let me say a little bit about the band structure of the cuprates. So the basic structure is this square lattice, electrons hopping on the square lattice. And you get, a lot of exotic phase diagram as a function of the density of electrons and temperature. There's a pseudo-gap metal at low doping and a conventional Fermi liquid and a high doping. And to cut a long story short, what I'll just show you is some very recent data, but there's a lot of other data. This pseudo-gap metal appears to be non-Luttinger volume metal, where the Fermi liquid has a Luttinger volume. But what's much more mysterious about this, as I've already mentioned, there's no natural way to divide the electrons into two and say, okay, when I'm in the pseudo gap, these electrons are going to localize and those are not. Somehow, some of the electrons localize as you go from here to here. And how that happens is really the heart of the problem. Okay, so I'm going to skip that. So here's the undoped material with one electron per site. They have some exchange couplings that you put in some holes. The holes can move around with some amplitude T. And so we're interested in the phase diagram of this model. Now, if you want to understand the Fermi surface, you should really take a momentum space point of view where you think in terms of band theory. And if you want to talk about bands, you have to always start either with a fully empty band or a completely empty band or a completely full band. So let's start from the completely full band, but a full band would have two electrons per site. This is the trivial state with two electrons per site. So if you now introduce holes, the number of holes in this is really not P, which is the density of holes, but one plus P. There are one plus P mobile holes from the momentum space point of view. So that's the Luttinger volume, one plus P. And if you look at experiments at larger P, that's exactly what you see. You see this large Luttinger volume, Fermi surface. But the big mystery is that if you go to small p, you don't see it. You see something bizarre in photo emission, which people are still arguing about. But I just want to briefly mention this recent beautiful experiment by Brad Ramshaw and Louis Tacher, who looked at what's called angle-dependent magneto resistance. And I will skip all the details, but the bottom line is that at large p, you see the Luttinger volume Fermi surface. And at small p, what fits the data best is that these pockets here, which is a non-Luttinger volume. So there seems to be some rather dramatic change from a Fermi liquid state at large p to a non-Fermi liquid state at small p. And right at the boundary, you also see a large enhancement of the specific heat. Okay. All right, so that's the essential, you know, mystery of the cuprates, in my opinion, the heart of everything. There are a lot of other bells and whistles having to do with symmetry breaking and so on, which I'm just ignoring because really this is the key problem as far as I'm concerned. And it's been around for a while, and there's been a lot of indication over the years, the last 10, 15 years, that there is this underlying transition between the FL state and the FL star state. And now this recent experiment of Brad Ramshaw seems to really crystallize the problem, because it's a very clean experiment, which it's hard to argue against anything that there is such a transition. So the question is really, how do you get a violation of the Luttinger volume in a one band model? You know, the model I showed you with the contour lattice, it was easy. You just say, okay, the F electrons localize, at least from hindsight. So how do you do this in one band model? Okay, there's been various attempts, but since I want to talk about the new results, I'll skip these attempts. They're based on these quantum dimer pictures and strong binding of electrons with holes, which we don't think actually happens in the real materials, but it's a toy model that we had before, which seems to give you a one-band picture, but it's really, you know, it's unsatisfactory for understanding many details of the experiment. So let me just go ahead to the new result. So this is the, now I'm going to talk about ancillary qubits. So what we want to do is, here's our physical layer of electrons, which is just a single band. So they're just mobile electrons. And under any reasonable circumstances, you would say these mobile electrons just obey the Luttinger theorem. They form a metal with a large Fermi surface. And that's indeed what they do at large doping in all of these high temperature superconductors. But I want to see if there's a way to have them not have the right Luttinger volume. And this was something, you know, as I said, I showed you some ways of doing it by using this dimer model. And there are other ways too that many people have tried, including us. And they all have some difficulty in either they only work at very small p and they can't reproduce the large p behavior, or they can't describe the phase transition. Or they have some issues that really, you know, for a while I was excited by many such approaches, but eventually you kind of see that there are some issues, that it's not a completely satisfactory approach. So I'm going to present the latest idea, which so far looks great to me, but maybe there'll be problems with it too. And if you have other ideas, I'm really delighted, would be happy to hear them. So this is an idea from Ya Hui, who proposed the following, very much in the spirit of, you know, PEPS, you would say. So here's the physical electrons you want to describe. So let's introduce a few more ancilla degrees of freedom, which I'll think of them as actual qubits, in two layers. Okay, so here's one layer of qubits, call them S1, and another layer of qubits, call it S2. Okay, so these are, you know, localized electrons, if you wish, but they have qubits. And I want to introduce two of them. The reason I want to introduce two of them, because I want a limit where these qubits don't change anything. So that's the limit where the coupling between them, J perp, is very large. And if that's the case, then they'll just form singlets. They'll be just complete, and there'll be a huge gap to exciting any of them. They'll just freeze out into a unique ground state, a totally trivial unique ground state. So they won't do anything. And then electrons that I'm really interested in, I'm free to have them form. They will form a Luttinger volume Fermi surface. So here's a trial wave function. You form the singlets of these S1 and S2, or the fermion psi and psi tilde. And then you just do the free fermion picture for C, and that gives you a trial wave function then for the conventional Fermi liquid state. Okay, but now there's a very neat way of using these qubits, these extra degrees of freedom, to write down a wave function that has the wrong Luttinger volume. So what do you do? Well, what you do for this Luttinger theorem is obeyed. So what I'm going to do is have the first two layers. So this first layer of qubits will no longer remain qubits. They're going to dissolve into the conduction band, just like the Kondo effect that I showed you at the beginning of my talk. So this layer effectively becomes mobile, and these two form a Kondo lattice, which has a, if the Kondo lattice was on its own, it would have, it would be a Luttinger volume Fermi surface. But with respect to these electrons, this is not the right Luttinger volume. So what's happened is you had, thinking in terms of holes, the electron density was 1 plus P. I guess I said that here somewhere. Maybe I didn't. Okay, yeah, so the density, it's right there. Okay, so the density of electrons is 1 plus P. And now I add one fermion per site from these qubits to this physical layer. So the total density of fermions is 2 plus P. But remember, everything is modulo 2, which is the same as P. So the combination of these two, it gives me exactly the right type of Fermi surface I wanted. It gives me Fermi surface of size P. But then what about the other layer of qubits? Well, the other layer of qubits then has to form a spin liquid because they are still qubits, and so they're going to resonate with each other and form insulator or a qubit. So what's happened is you introduce these two layers, which were totally fake to begin with, and they were both qubits. And what happened is one of them remained qubits, remained an insulator, but the other one underwent a selective mod transition. It used to be an insulator, but it became a metal. And then it hybridized with the physical electrons to give you the small Fermi surface. So you now have, you know, exactly the ingredient you needed to form, to violate the Luttinger volume. You have these, you have a emergent gauge field, which is sitting in the second layer of qubits. And then you have the wrong volume Fermi surface that's aided by the first layer of qubits. So everything just falls very neatly into place, and you get at least a trial wave function, which we didn't have before, for this Luttinger volume, violating volume metal. So here's the wave function, which is just a copy of the things we've done so far. You take the first two layers, treat the psi fermions as free, have them hybridize. So that's the Slater determinant of C and psi. And you make a Slater determinant of the psi tilde also to form some spin liquid state of your favorite type. It could be anything you want, and you could have any kind of topological order you wish to in principle. And then, now this is the hard part, you do a projection. You project onto singlets of these two. So these, you know, ultimately these are not physical degrees of freedom. So right now I have a wave function which has you know, has degrees of freedom here, here, and here. And just like in PEPS, you just trace out these ones. And the way you trace it out in this, you just project these into singlets. So that's the last procedure here. Project onto rung singlets of psi and psi tilde. So we've been discussing with a few people how to actually numerically evaluate this. And it turns out this projection is, you know, quite difficult. But I'm hopeful with some of the PEPS experts in the audience, you can teach us how to do this very efficiently and actually work numerically with this wave function. And then I think that'll be extremely exciting. Okay. So yeah, so you got the Luttinger theorem violated because it's the Luttinger volume violated. I should be careful. And it's okay because of the topological order of the psi tilde. Okay. I think I've already said that, similar to a selective mode transition in hidden layer one. Okay. Let me skip that. Yeah, I have only 5 minutes left just before I have to go to my class at 3 o'clock. So the bulk of these papers is really about this phase transition. So this approach also gives you a way of describing this phase transition. And I won't go into it, except to say that it's a complicated gauge theory. It turns out to be in the simplest case, a SU2 cross U1 gauge theory, which can describe not only the two phases, one of the phases is a Higgs phase and the other is a confining phase, but also in principle, the critical point between them. And so what happens is that, yeah, so here's the type of gauge theories you get, that these fermions, which we call ghost fermions, psi and psi tilde, would just seem like auxiliary degrees of freedom. And in the UV, that's what they are. Near the critical point, they actually become physical, that there are these extra, you get these extra ghost Fermi surfaces right near the critical point, which to leading order are made up of these extra degrees of freedom. Now, it seems like you're cheating. You've added in degrees of freedom that you should really project out. However, it turns out in the IR, there's more than you expected. So even though you projected out in the UV by doing the gauge theory, in the IR, you still get extra degrees of freedom that we think are really physical and actually have to be there. And in a way, it's good because these extra degrees of freedom can also explain, in principle, this peak in the specific heat that I mentioned. Okay. All right. Yeah. So this is a summary of some of the things. Yeah. So this Zeffel star phase is a theory of the pseudo gap metal. They're ghost fermions, which was seemed like fake in the UV theory, but actually appear as physical excitations in the IR theory and could be detected by various thermal probes. You also have an explanation of superconductivity in principle from these ghost fermions, because it turns out that they have one of the gauge fields at least lead to an attractive interaction between them. All right. So these are my conclusions then. So by introducing a double layer of ancillary qubits, we're able to describe an FL star phase as a single band model. So some of the electrons localize. And the beauty of this is that you don't have to choose which electrons are going to localize, which are not. The ancilla do it for you. You choose between the ancilla, one layer of ancilla is localized and the other doesn't. And then you get a completely democratic treatment of the physical electrons and you get a phase, a state with the wrong volume of Fermi surface as related to the Luttinger volume. This allows you to describe a phase transition, which I only said very little about. And the theory of the critical point gives you all kinds of fractionalized excitations and also a large low T entropy near the critical point. And of course, my main message to this audience, we would love to see further work on this trial wave function that we've written it very much in a condensed matter perspective. But maybe some of the technology that people in this audience have developed can really help understand further details of some of the properties of this wave function. So let me put up the wave function and then I'll stop. Yeah, so there it is. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for this very interesting talk. Do you still have a few minutes for questions or?
I have about five, let's say.
Okay, yeah. So a few questions. Yes, if anyone has questions, please just unmute yourself and talk, or you can also raise your hand if you prefer.
Oh, I do.
Okay, so I have one question. So you mentioned it's an SU2. Cross U1 over Z2 gauge theory. Can you extend or generalize the framework to some SUN Hubbard model with arbitrary N?
Yes, this could be generalized to that. It could be generalized to any sort of symmetry. The key thing is we're trying to get a metallic state which has the wrong volume. So and the issue really is how do you get that in a one-band model? I mean, this has been a major problem, an issue in the field for a long time. At least for me, it's quite a revelation to see that just by introducing the Zencilla, you can quite quickly do it. And yes, I think you can do it for many, many other models. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions?
So here, I want to understand a little bit better. How should I think about those hidden layers? What is like physically what they represent?
Physically, well, well, I mean, I guess they represent some, you know, some very subtle correlations in the physical electrons. So each electron moving around has a correlation hole around it, and you can think of these psi fermions as some representation of the correlation hole. And then once you form a, you know, some of the other electrons should form a spin liquid. Now spin liquids, of course, have, you know, all kinds of constraints on them. They have to obey certain symmetry properties and so on. And all of that is very, you know, all the spin liquid aspects are captured by the second qubit layer. So the nice thing about, you know, so people try to do all this fancy stuff within the layer, and it becomes very confusing and complicated. But having these layers separates the physics out for you. It puts the spin liquid physics in this layer. It puts the Luttinger volume physics in this layer, and it just makes it so much easier to think about things. So,
I fully agree that this is like very original idea. Just want to try to understand a little bit better. So you think that potentially you can, like, I wonder if you can make a prediction that, you know, that can be even addressed experimentally because it seems natural from the model.
Like, yeah, well, this psi, this ghost Fermi surface of psi is a prediction from this model that it must be there. You know, it would seem like it's a construct of this particular of the Zencilla qubits, but we don't think so. We think it's really a specific prediction for this, for a transition between FL star and FL in a one band model. Yeah. It's a property of this universality class. But of course, a ghost Fermi surface is hard to detect because it doesn't carry spin or charge, but it carries heat. So there is, at least in principle, for example, you could measure the specific heat. Normally, the specific heat is believed for a Fermi surface, believed to be related to the quasi-particle effective mass. But you can also measure quasi-particle effective mass in other approaches like quantum oscillations. So if you see that, if you measure the specific heat, you get many more much more specific heat than you would have expected from the effective mass of your quasi-particle, then that tells you that there's a ghost Fermi surface. So it's not as if in principle not detectable. It is detectable. And they're very difficult experiments, but there certainly are specific experimental predictions.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much.
Sure.
Are there any more questions?
Okay. I mean, one more remark, if I may make, about this issue of specific heat. Some of you may know about the SYK model. The SYK model has this feature that if you go to low temperatures, it's got not just a little bit of extra specific heat, it's got a macroscopic entropy in the limit of temperature goes to zero. So that's a huge amount of extra entropy you get in the SYK model that you wouldn't have expected. So here, you're getting just a little bit extra. You're not getting a microscopic entropy. You're just getting a factor of two or three in the specific heat. And that's a relatively small contribution from the exponentially large set of states available to you in a many-body system. Yeah. So it's a very small correction from a many-body point of view. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you. So I'm seeing not any other raised hands. So no more questions. Okay, so thank you very much again for your very nice talk.
Thank you.
And
thank you.